Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
They only listen to me half the time anyway, right?
You think it's that high? Wow, that's generous.
Yes! Go, Cammy!
This is an intervention.
Oh.
Not voting.
Oh, okay.
That's the coolest coffee trick I've ever seen.
I'm going to put a little bit more blackberry.
End of podcast because of that.
I owe you some audio equipment.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
This is a true story. One night, a local woman was sitting at her computer when she noticed a strange light outside of her window. No, it wasn't a UFO, at least not the kind that you're thinking of. It was a drone, also kind of called an unmanned aerial vehicle, or a UAV, and it was hovering just a few feet from her window with a clear view into the home. When I looked up and I saw it, I immediately got up to remove myself from their view and called for my husband, she said. By the time we looked out the window again, it was gone. The woman asked not to be identified, but said it was okay to share that she lives on Meridian Road near Aurora. Of course, she called the sheriff's office about what seemed to be an obvious case of trespassing. Fortunately, she was told it's not that simple. Although the officer expressed frustration, outrage, and understanding of my fear and anger, they indicated to me that there is nothing that can be done, she says. Drones are legal, and in fact, if you see one flying around your property, it is, and I'm using air quotes here, illegal to shoot them down. People have faced lawsuits by drone owners that have been fined significantly. This is true. Though one lawsuit was dismissed in 2017 against a Kentucky man who shot down a drone he believed was spying on his sunbathing teenage daughter, some would-be drone slayers have also faced criminal penalties for reckless endangerment for firing guns in city limits. Canby Police Detective Sergeant Mike Smith said there's one state law in Oregon that would prohibit a drone pilot from knowingly harassing another person on their private property. One small problem, you have to know who the pilot is to indict them.
And that's the hard part, because like the lady said that you might be talking with, or somebody that, you know, is having one fly over their house. Unless you know who owns the drone, it's going to be very difficult to hold that person accountable. And some of the drones these days can, you know, the law says you have to keep it within sight. But, you know, unfortunately, some people out there don't obey the law. And, I mean, there's drones out there that can fly miles away. So in order for somebody to be able to keep track of that and be able to see it and find out who the owner of the drone is, it's very difficult.
Sergeant Smith says that fortunately, an incident like that we just described has not yet been reported in Camby. But it is something that concerns aviation and law enforcement officials from the federal government all the way down to the local level. The problem is that the technology has outpaced the law and regulations. Commercial drones have just become available in the United States a few years ago. Now they can fly for miles, come equipped with high-definition cameras, and some cheap models can be bought for less than $100. Federal and state lawmakers are working on solutions, but it'll take some time. For now, it's just a gray area.
It's super gray.
Yeah.
Because it's not, like I said, it's going to be, you know, very difficult. But the cool thing about Canby is we care a lot about the livability of the city and we care about the citizens. And we're going to, you know, go as far as we can to try and help them out.
Cool.
You know, I mean, that's what our job is. And that's what our goal would be to do, is to do everything we possibly could.
Yeah.
Granted, you know, it's super difficult.
Well, you can't fly, right? I mean, as far as I know.
No, I've tried a couple times. It doesn't work out. No.
If you notice a drone trespassing on your property or behaving suspiciously, call the Canby Police Department's non-emergency dispatch number at 503-655-8211. Until then, keep your eye on the sky.
The community got our first look last week at the Ackerman Recreation Complex, a proposed complex of multi-use sports fields and courts that would be built behind Lee Elementary and the Ackerman Center through a collaboration between the City of Canby and Canby School District. Mayor Brian Hodson presented a series of designs to the Cambie City Council at last week's meeting, all of which were prepared by Cameron McCarthy, a consulting firm hired by the city to complete a feasibility study. The designs varied, but all contained some mix of baseball, softball, rugby, soccer, football, and lacrosse fields, basketball, tennis, and pickleball courts, a pedestrian walking trail, restrooms and concession stands, maintenance facilities, and over 100 new parking spaces. The designs also included a mix of grass fields and artificial turf, which is much more expensive to install, but can be used year-round. Mayor Hodson explained that the Ackerman Complex Task Force and the consultants made great effort to include as wide a range of potential uses and users as possible.
The dark green area, that is would be area that is turfed, not natural grass. The lighter green would be the natural grass areas. The red is a track or a trail that would go around the complex. And then the yellow stars are individual, either like learning kiosks or exercise stations that people can use. The objective was looking at the complex was trying to figure out how do we create an area that can be used from, you know, 8 months old to 108 if we have it.
Councilor Greg Parker, who is a member of the task force, says he was impressed with the variety and depth of experience among the community members who are looking at this project. There are a number of different ways to approach an undertaking of this magnitude, he says, but the first question is always the same. What's the first question going to be?
The task force has decided the first question should be answering what, and then the how will come later. So it was clear to me around the table that there were experts on design of athletic fields and overlapping seasons and participants from the different leagues there that had a pretty intimate idea of their schedules and other people's schedules. So pretty strong consensus that with this piece of property, this offers as much flexibility and also meets Title IX requirements of equal access.
The Cambie School District also reviewed the proposed designs last week, as did the Task Force and Cambie Parks and Recreation Advisory Board. The potential cost of the Ackerman project was barely touched on last Wednesday, but it looks to be substantial. Hodson said the turf costs alone for one of the proposed designs clocked in at about $1.8 million. That subject of money will likely be revisited at much greater length during the council's next meeting on April 3rd, when the intergovernmental agreement between the city and Cambie School District is scheduled to be discussed. The IGA is a crucial piece of the puzzle. In fact, it's not an exaggeration to say that the entire project depends on it. Hammering out the details between the two government entities is expected to take several months, but if they can come to terms, the IGA could be finalized and signed by the end of August. If everything goes according to the current plan, the sparkling new Ackerman Recreation Complex may host its first soccer tournament in the fall of 2020. And there may be even more in the works. The nearby Ackerman Center was once a middle school, but district projections suggest it won't be needed for that purpose in the foreseeable future. Could it perhaps be better utilized as the community center Cambie residents have been wanting for years? It's, quote, not an out-of-the-question conversation, according to Mayor Hodson, something that Councilor Sarah Spoon found exciting.
The school district is having a lot of conversation now about what is the future of Ackerman, and Superintendent Goodall did mention, you know, at the chamber luncheon that, well, what could that be? Could that end up someday being a community center? And what would that look like? So all of a sudden, this all kind of becomes a bigger piece for the community. So
yeah, I mean, I'm really excited about the prospect of a community center.
Yeah.
But I think that the idea of having it all in one place is pretty exciting. If there's a how that works for everyone. I think the what's pretty cool.
To see the initial design concepts for the proposed Ackerman Complex, visit our website, cambienowpod.com. Local attorney and former Cambie City Councilor Tyler Smith did not seek another term in office last November after being appointed to the council in 2016. At the time, he didn't say why. And in public comments last week, he explained that this was because he didn't want to overshadow the swearing-in of new councilor Sean Barwick, who was elected to Smith's seat after running unopposed. He broke his silence at the March 20th City Council meeting, appearing during the portion set aside for public comment, and as it turned out, he had a lot to say.
And the keys that I think you all, not all of you, I state this with not all of you, but some of you should take heed of and think about is some of the childish behavior and the waste of time and city money and embarrassing things that take place at our city council meetings and in some of the conversations about each other and about other city councilors.
To hear Smith tell it, the issues began before he was even on the council. During his, quote, contentious appointment process, he said he was called too conservative and overly political, and claims that an unnamed member of the city council attempted to pay another attorney to do a background check on him. Other childish behavior he says he observed included members rolling their eyes at other counselors, grandstanding, and saying they don't want to sit next to other counselors. At a meeting where the denial of the proclamation to coincide with International Transgender Day of Visibility would later become a major topic of discussion, Smith also raised a concern about proclamations. The city makes too many of them.
Another thing that's come up is I had mentioned to the mayor that I thought we spend too much time and take away from important, very important things like Vietnam Veterans Memorials Days by having too many insignificant proclamations. I went back and counted 2017. That was the first year I was on city council. We had 23 proclamations in 12 months. Some of them are important, some of them are not. Barbershop Singing Week, I would posit to you, takes away the significance of Vietnam Veterans Memorial Day or Iwo Jima Day, both which days we had.
Finally, Smith said the council reports, during which members are expected to share news from the various committees and community partners for which they serve as liaisons, often divulge into unnecessary updates about things that aren't crucial to city business.
The Clackamas County Fair Board is seeking input from the public on its master plan for the county fairgrounds, which will identify new facilities, upgrades to existing facilities, and infrastructure improvements needed to maintain the fairgrounds as an attractive and viable place for the County Clackamas Fair and other events and activities throughout the year. If you didn't know, that was all one sentence, so I'm a little out of breath. An open house will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. today, March 28th, at the Horning Hall to discuss the proposal, collect input, and share initial design concepts. Participants can drop in anytime and stay as long as they like to learn about the proposed new facilities and comment on site plan alternatives. Councilor Greg Parker said that the Fair Board is also working with CTV Channel 5 to share information about the proposed plan for those who aren't able to attend this week's event.
What I'm hoping is that video will be produced so we can upload it on YouTube, and for people who aren't able to make it there during the day, they'll be able to see it and offer feedback. But quite often, after things are all said and done, people come to us and say, why didn't you ask us what you want? Here, the County Fair Board is saying, what do you want? What do you think about? What will be the facility needs in the next 50 years?
For more information, visit www.clackamas.us/fair.
So I'm here with Derek Hill, president of Advantage Mortgage in Canby. I was wondering what's going on in the mortgage industry right now.
The mortgage industry is on fire right now. The big thing that's really exciting for us is that we are now an independent mortgage broker, which means that we can offer substantially lower rates and lower fees for our customers. For example, we just got a loan last week and the realtor said, hey, I think you should go talk to Derek at Advantage Mortgage. And sure enough, we got the borrower 3/4 better rate and we saved him $14,000 in fees.
Cool. So where can people find you?
So office number is 503-266-5800, or they can find us on the web at findtheadvantage.com. But most people just give us a holler or they stop in.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Derek.
You bet. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 1770599, Derek Hill's NMLS number 50183, Equal Housing Opportunity.
True story. When we first started the Can Be Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers, just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real live human and a creative genius who would deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com. Okay, so I'm sitting here at T-Line Design in Canby, and I'm sitting with the vice president, Caleb Garrison. Caleb, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on the program. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Sure. I am the licensing person in charge of licensing for T-Line, and what licensing entails is basically working with studios, anything that you think might be a cool thing to put on a t-shirt. What I tend to tell people is whatever your favorite movie or TV show, I get to license those and put those on a t-shirt and then sell them to retail stores. It's really a fun gig to do, and it's one of the hats I wear here.
Do you get to kind of go to studios and hang out with some of the places where they produce some of these
I actually have a good story. Like, the one story that I have that's really fun is we definitely go to studios.
Yeah.
I tend to fly down to L.A. A couple times a year.
Uh-huh.
So really close with Fox,
yeah,
NBC Universal, Sony.
You and Macaulay Culkin are like super tight.
Oh, we're tight. Yeah. I don't know him at all.
Okay.
I don't know him at all. But there was a TV show on called Community a while ago.
Yes,
and
heard of it.
Before we licensed it, I'm a big fan of a lot of the shows we get. So
yeah.
Parks and Rec, The Office,
yeah.
Community. I'm a fan of those shows.
My co-host, Tyler Clausen, I think Community is his favorite all-time show.
So he'll love this story. So,
yeah.
So one of the things that people don't always know is that a studio actually might produce a show, but then it's on another studio's channel.
Gotcha.
So, for example, Brooklyn Nine-Nine was on Fox, but it was produced by NBC.
Okay.
Community was produced by Sony, but it was on NBC.
That feels like it doesn't make sense.
it doesn't, but they don't have so much space.
Gotcha, for programs.
For airtime,
yeah.
So when Community aired, I was actually in the process of trying to sign it, and I got a call from one of the people I work with, and she said, hey, you know, I want to put you in touch with one of the people at the show, because they need some shirts done. And we do contract work, so I was like, absolutely. So it turns out that the t-shirts that were being done were for Danny Pudi, who plays Abed on the show.
Okay.
And he just wanted some shirts for himself, I think. I can't remember. It was a while ago.
Yeah.
But in return, he actually, and I didn't need, like, the favor returned. I was just stoked to be able to work with him on this.
Yeah, of course.
And I thought, hey, you know, this is going to be better for us to get the property. So in return, he actually invited me down to see the set.
What?
And here's another thing that's interesting. So Community was produced by Sony.
Uh-huh.
It was on NBC. It was shot at the Paramount lot.
What?
The Paramount lot actually used to be owned by RKO.
Okay.
So it's got all this history, you know,
right.
All the Hollywood history. But yeah, three studios are involved in that. So I went down and my son was about 7 or 8 at the time.
Uh-huh.
And we got
target audience of Community.
Well, he is now. He's 13 and a half.
Yeah.
But so we got to go down and we walked the set.
Yeah.
And we met Joe McHale. And we met a few of the other actors.
That's so cool.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And the funny story about it for me is that, so Danny's just a real, he's awesome. He's just as cool as what you'd see on the show. Or cooler actually in person. We walk by craft services. A craft service table is where they have all the junk food and all kinds of stuff for the actors and the crew and whoever's working there. And he stopped us there, and my son's, you know, 7 or 8, and he points to the big thing of jelly beans. And he says, oh, you want some jelly beans? And of course, my son Jack was like, absolutely. You know? And so he has his little cup of jelly beans. He's walking around the set totally oblivious to the fact that we're on a TV show set. Right. Super cool. All these actors
he's
are around.
He's just at work with that.
He's like, just like, jelly beans. They're awesome.
Yeah.
And and now he's a fan of the show. Right. Now it's streaming. Everything's streaming, right? So he's a fan of the show, and he can't believe that he missed that opportunity. Yeah. And I was like, well, you know, who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
Where we still have the license for Community.
Right. That's always how it goes. Like, literally, like, that 8-year-old had an experience cooler than anything I've ever done in my entire life and didn't appreciate it at the time. Right. Like,
so, I mean, that's one of the cool things that's come out of doing the licensing program that we do. We have about 38 different properties that include movies and TV brands and... You know, I mean, we have some random stuff like Napster, for example.
Yeah, so you do have Home Alone. I'm trying to remember. What are some of the other kind of
properties in the movie categories? Some of our top property is going to be Step Brothers.
Yes.
Talladega Nights.
Yeah.
Home Alone. We just signed a ton with Fox. So, I mean, included in those are Dude, Where's My Car? My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah.
Gosh, there's just so many. Napoleon Dynamite. You know, I have a list if you want to see it.
Right. Right.
And then there's television. Most of the television ones are Parks and Rec, like I've said before. Mm-hmm. And then we have brands like Hostess Snack Cakes, Napster, Chuck E. Cheese. Mm-hmm. These are things that kind of are a little bit more retro most of the time.
Right, yeah.
Distress or vintage of the designs. And then we have about 6 properties from Cartoon Network.
Yeah,
you know, which are a lot of people probably around your age that would recognize, like Dexter's Laboratory, Ed and Eddie, Courage the Cowardly Dog. Samurai Jack, shows like that.
Well, that's why I wanted to do this, because I was on your website. Let me just ask you first of all, because like I had no idea what T-Line Design did. Like, I know you have a t-shirt on your logo, which I never really processed to me until I knew what you did.
Yeah.
If I had to guess before I knew, like, I literally would have thought you guys do like something with sewer line or something like that. Do you feel like you're kind of under the radar here in Canby? Like, you get to do so much cool stuff, and I wonder if people really know what is happening
here. I don't think most people do. I mean, the thing is with us is, so the name came from the owner, Eric Beckagreed. Supposedly how the name was created was it was T-Line, so a line of T-shirts.
Okay, right? Sure.
So that's where it started. And this...
Complicated. How many days did that take?
In this industry, when it first started, it was very small. And he was the one, he did everything.
Yeah.
He was running the company, it was his company, he was doing all the design work. He was doing everything. And that was back in 89 when he started. And... it really started in doing humor, so joke shirts. Sure. We weren't even licensing at that point.
Right. Which is like everything now, but back then, like, it was pretty cutting edge.
Back then, it was what t-shirts were all about, and you were selling to small stores, small mom-and-pop stores.
Yeah.
And we, actually, as the internet grew, that all kind of fell apart for those mom-and-pops, sadly.
Yeah.
You know, so we had to shift too.
Yeah.
You know, we had to be dynamic in what we were doing, and that's when we started getting into licensing. We started with... the colleges, University of Oregon, Oregon State, some of the Washington colleges. And we've kept a few of them. We still have University of Oregon, Oregon State. But and then we eventually moved into the entertainment stuff that I talked about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think we're flying under the radar here.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not a store.
Right.
You know, we're a wholesale company.
Yeah.
So if you walked in here, we'd probably go, we can't really sell you anything.
Right. We can tell you where to go.
Yeah, we can send you to Urban Outfitters or Hot Topic or Target or, you know, dozens of other retailers that carry our designs.
That sounded kind of aggressive. Like, we'll tell you where to go. Like,
well, don't get me wrong. We love Canby. We've been here for 20 years.
For sure.
We love this town. We've seen it grow.
Yeah.
We have about 30, 35 employees.
Yeah.
We try to take care of them
as
best we can. And I think most of our employees, you know, as far as I know, are happy to be here.
I'm going to go interview every one of them after, so don't worry. We'll get that. Yeah.
You should. It's a fun company to work for. You know, we do fun things. We get to work in pop culture. My son thinks I'm amazing because he gets a lot of our, when I do sampling, you know, and we end
up. Go to trade shows and things.
Yeah, and you know, he did get to go on the set of Community. Right. So, I mean, there are some benefits to it.
For sure. Yeah, so when I did find out what you did, and you mentioned kind of my age group, like, I was so excited. I've been really excited to talk to you and to have you guys on the show because there's so many things that, like, are from my culture. Like, you know, like Home Alone, I've seen that movie probably 10,000 times.
Absolutely.
Kind of your guys' specialty within the licensing industry is sort of finding those underutilized or kind of maybe forgotten type properties that plug into that nostalgia mm-hmm. element a little bit. Is that true?
That's very true. I mean, the apparel industry, especially licensed apparel, is definitely not as big as it once was. Mm-hmm. And the companies that are big are doing huge things with Marvel and Disney yeah. and Star Wars, and those are huge.
You don't compete with Disney.
We don't have those licenses. Yeah. Right? So those companies don't. Disney doesn't make its own T-shirts.
Right.
They license that out to somebody.
Oh, okay.
Else.
Yeah.
So the same thing goes for The Office, like the TV show The Office. NBC is not going to make their own T-shirts.
Right. Right.
It's not really in their wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But those. And what's called an MG, a minimum guarantee, for those type of properties, for like Marvel,
yeah.
Are just within millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Okay. So you usually when you sign a licensing deal, you usually have an advance and a minimum guarantee and then a term.
Mm-hmm.
And our responsibility as the licensee is to hit that minimum guarantee.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of a gamble. So when you go after properties that are a little bit more obscure.
Yeah.
Those can be huge,
yeah.
or they can be misses.
Right. Yeah.
Give you an example. So yeah. The Sandlot. When we signed that, it was.
Oh
part
yeah,
of
that, I remember that from the list. The yeah. other movie I've seen probably 10,000 times.
The
yeah.
Sandlot. We really helped turn that into what's called a evergreen property.
Yeah.
So Goonies would be an evergreen property.
Yeah.
We don't have Goonies. That's another company. We should have it since they filmed it here in Oregon.
Right.
But I couldn't convince Fox that that was a reason to give it to
yeah,
us.
Yeah. Well, Fox, if you're listening, bad move.
Right? Yeah, right.
Shame, for
right.
shame.
Right. But we did get the Sandlot from Fox.
Yeah.
And when we got it originally, it was a pretty low guarantee.
Yeah.
We, at T-Line.
Because that was one of those sort of like forgotten, or I don't even know
absolutely.
What they call them, dead kind of properties. They don't
yeah,
expect
but the
them
thing
to make
is,
anything.
Yeah, the thing about that property, yeah, they call it a vault property,
yeah.
right? So a lot of the things that are that we sign tend to be vault properties, and we try to make those into something bigger.
Yeah.
The Sandlot became an evergreen property because of T-Line's involvement in
yeah.
it. And when, you know, most people know that movie without having seen it.
Right.
Because there's that one iconic line, right?
Yeah.
You're killing
me, Smalls.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we yeah. took that property into a multi-million dollar property.
Yeah.
You know, sold over 700,000 units at mm-hmm. Target of one design.
Yeah.
And it's just been a great property for us. We also have been lucky. We found Grumpy Cat before it went viral.
Yeah.
That became a multi-million dollar property.
Yeah.
The Office is a great property as well, and some of the other ones we have are just phenomenal.
Yeah.
So we just, you know, we do fly under the radar. We are one of the smaller companies here in Oregon
yeah.
and in general in the U.S. for
yeah.
licensing. And, you know, we like it that way.
Yeah.
You know, we don't
cool.
want everybody to know who we are. We have a great sales rep group
yeah.
that we work with, and we sell all over the country.
Mm.
So.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Last question. Can you tell me a little bit about how you approach the creative side when you have a property? Obviously, it's more than just slapping a Sandlot logo on a T-shirt, right?
Sure.
Like, how do you decide what sort of aspect or what line or what kind of how you want to utilize those properties?
Sure. Well, I mean, a lot of our stuff is geared towards, you know, a certain demographic.
Yeah.
So we're looking at the people who are going to shop at Hot Topic a lot of the time.
Okay. So you start with
or
kind
urban
of the
outdoors.
Customer.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we try and design towards the retailer.
Okay.
Because what's going to sell at Hot Topic isn't necessarily going to sell at Kohl's
okay.
or Target.
Yeah.
It is pretty close, though.
Yeah.
So, but if it's hot at Hot Topic right now,
yeah.
it'll sell at Kohl's in 6 months.
Yeah.
Right? So the way we do creative, and it's so much easier nowadays
right.
because of the internet.
Yeah.
You know, you can jump on YouTube and start watching clips from Parks and Rec, no problem. Come up with ideas. But what really pays off for us more than anything is being a fan of the show.
Yeah.
Knowing the show, having watched it, and knowing what other fans would probably wear on a T-shirt.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah.
So we can do stuff that even other companies that might be a lot bigger than us,
yeah.
who have the same license as we do,
yeah.
can't do because
yeah.
theirs looks generic
right.
and ours looks like fans.
Right.
You know, and so for us, creatively, we pay attention to what's out in the market.
Mm-hmm.
We look to be innovative as well.
Yeah.
We've come up with a few different looks that are definitely a T-Line look
yeah.
That we are being copied by now, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, but that's really the creative is the most fun part of, I think, the licensing. I mean, I love going after and finding, you know, why these shows are great. I mean, yeah. I tell people this. Michael Schur is a producer.
Right.
He was also, for the little trivia.
For the Office fans.
Exactly. You, yeah. A little Office fan. He was Moe's.
Moe's, yeah.
He also was the co-creator of The Good Place.
The Good Place, yeah.
He's also the co-creator of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Also writer on both. Was yeah. a writer for The Office. Was a writer for Parks and Rec. Okay. Guy's involved in all that stuff.
Yeah, he's a right? genius, pretty much.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, cool. Cool. Well, thanks so much for telling us a little bit about what you do. Like Absolutely. I said, I was so excited about this. I think yeah. it's so cool that I'm sure people listening to this probably own a design or a t-shirt, maybe are wearing it right now and have no idea that it originated right here in Canby.
Yeah.
I think that's so cool. So we're going to end this here. I was thinking we would talk now about if you're interested, maybe some underutilized local podcast properties that might be right. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, yeah, we can do it.
Yeah, yeah. It was really nice to meet you, Caleb. Thanks
nice
so much.
To meet you.
Beer is practically an art form in the Pacific Northwest. And the FOB Taproom in Canby is one of the best places to enjoy all your old favorites and your new favorites. They have a constantly rotating selection of 36 of the best craft beer, ciders, and wines from right here in Oregon and around the world. Hey, Tyler, do you know what FOB stands for? That's right. It's Friends of Beer, and that's what they are.
Oh, well, the FOB Taproom also hosts an awesome trivia night on Wednesdays with tap takeovers and new release parties every month. There's always something going on, so come on by. Find them at the Canby Place on Southwest Berg Parkway and on Facebook and Instagram.
See you at the FOB. All right, I'm on the line with Olivia Palacios. Did I say that right?
Yeah, you said it right, yeah.
Okay, I always want to do the pronunciations right, and I often don't, so thank you for helping me with that.
Yeah, of course.
And you've been, for this past week, you've been at the Oregon FFA conference?
Yeah, this weekend was the 91st Oregon FFA State Convention.
Okay,
in Redmond.
Cool. And you go to Canby High School, or what's your story?
Yeah, I'm a senior at Canby High School at the moment.
Okay.
I have gone to Canby since I was a sophomore, and yeah.
And have you done FFA like your whole life or what?
Yeah, so FFA in my family is very prominent. My grandfather was an ag teacher, and both of my parents were in FFA.
Oh, at like a university or something, or?
Oh, my grandfather?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a advisor at Malala and Dayton High School.
That is so
and
cool.
He did that for a while, and uh-huh. then he retired. But yeah, I've always been around FFA, and I started in eighth grade the summer after my eighth grade year, and I'm still in it, and I absolutely love it.
You haven't gotten bored with it yet?
What was that?
I said you haven't gotten bored with it yet.
Oh, no, not at all. Still going strong.
Is this your first time at the conference, or had you been to that before as well?
So my first FFA convention was before I could even remember. I was really young when I first went, but the one that I remember the most was my sixth grade year. And, I've loved it, and I've gone ever since.
Okay, you can't remember anything before your sixth grade year. That's a little later than most folks, Olivia, but that's okay.
Yeah, right?
So,
sixth grade, I feel like really impacted me, but...
Yeah, oh, yeah. Okay, gotcha. So that's when your memory kind of started saying, I think I should start storing some of this stuff.
exactly, yeah.
But this year's conference, you actually were named one of the conference-wide offices, right? Can you tell us a little bit about it? Actually, I got jealous because it was what I often call myself, I think.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, so I was elected the 2019-2020 Oregon FFA State Reporter.
Right, and they never even asked me if I wanted to be the reporter, and I am a reporter.
I know,
so
what the heck?
I'm really upset, but it's okay. It's okay.
That's okay. All right, I'll live through it, yeah. But
congratulations. That's quite the honor.
Yes, it is. Thank you so much. I've been wanting this since sixth grade. I've been wanting to be a state officer since sixth grade, and that's, you know, why the convention that your impact would be so much. But
yeah, you may have even been wanting it before that. You just can't remember.
Exactly. Exactly, Tyler. Yes. Yes. But yeah, we went through a grueling interview process of behavioral interviews and speeches and a couple of tests.
Oh, wow.
And for our nominating committee. And yeah, it was really tough because there was, I don't know if you've heard this, but there was a total of 26 candidates this year.
Oh my gosh, I did not know. I was going to ask. That is crazy.
Yeah. It is. So unfortunately, the other 20 that didn't make it, it's upsetting because you go through that just absolutely emotionally draining process.
Yeah.
But it was so much fun to go through, and now I'm here, and I'm so thankful to get out on the other side. So.
Yeah, congrats. So was it something that is just duties at the conference, or do you sort of have a statewide kind of role for until the next conference? How does it work?
Yeah, so throughout the year, I go to training tomorrow.
Okay.
In Corvallis. So I start training with my team on how to create workshops for leadership workshops during camps for the students across Oregon. We go to a summit in D.C. and we visit classrooms around Oregon during our leadership tour. And we really focus on agriculture education and premier leadership during our time on that 5 months that we're on the road. Mm-hmm. And I'm very, very excited to be doing that. That's what we do. We just impact students and teach them about leadership and agriculture.
Yeah, that's really cool. And why did you want this?
Why did I want this?
Yeah.
Well, during my freshman year at state convention, so there's also a national officer team, which is, there's, you know, anyone can apply to it. And, I remember it was the last session of convention and I saw the national officer and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. I have to meet her. And I just wanted to meet her really quick. And I just remember that she stopped and talked to me for 5 minutes. I do not remember what we talked about. I just remember how she made me feel, and she made me feel important and wanted, and like that I mattered. And so that's what really struck a chord in my heart, and that's what I want to give to the students around Oregon. I want to make them feel wanted and important.
Well, that is absolutely awesome, Olivia. Thank you so much for telling me about that and for wanting to do this. And congratulations for getting there. Is there anything specific about the reporter job or the reporter office that is specific to that? Because it sounded like you were describing kind of you guys as a team and sort of having a similar type of role working together to accomplish a similar mission. But
yeah, so there's no specific role that we play in our position that we're placed in.
Okay.
So we're all just a team and we work together. And yeah, exactly what you said. We just want to involve everyone, all the students in Oregon.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Olivia. Best of luck in this new role in this next year. And thanks for telling us about it.
Great. Yeah. Thank you, Tyler. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Have a great time.
Thank you, Tyler.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
It's called Electrum. It transfers the stencil on it.
No, that looks great. I like that.
You like placement?
Yeah.
Depending on what you want down the road, we can do some like background on it. So we'll let that dry for 10 minutes.
Oh, man. No, I'm
just kidding. Totally kidding.
That scared the crap out of me.
Sorry.
All right. So I'm Tyler Clausen, obviously not Tyler Frankie, and I am with the Campanile Podcast doing some out and about fun stuff. I'm here at the tattoo shop that opened up how long ago?
We opened in December.
December. Yeah. And it's called Don't Die Naked Tattoo Shop, right?
Don't Die Naked Art and Ink.
That's what it is. Yeah. It's such a long name. The naked part's the only part that I care about.
That's usually what catches people's attention.
So do you want to kind of just introduce yourself a little bit?
Yeah, my name's Steve Davis. Pretty much, me and my fiance started this, this business up here. She's from this town. I grew up here, went to high school here, and moved out, down to, I guess, Salem area.
Okay.
And, yeah, her and her mom and family, talked me into, I was working at a Silverton Tattoo Company with one of my good friends, Luke. I worked there for about a year, and towards the end, her mom and her and some other clients kind of were talking me into this area because there's no shops up here, and,
sure.
And yeah, it would be a good service for the community, and so here I am.
So how long have you been actually doing tattoo work?
Since 1996, and
okay.
I started probably like a majority of artists while I was in jail down in California.
Mm-hmm.
Did that whole thing, that whole lifestyle for a long time and decided I was done. I moved up here in 2012 to Salem, went through tattoo school, and I've been licensed since 2013 in the state. And I've
okay.
pretty much, yeah.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
That's super cool. What's like your, like, what's your favorite piece that you've done?
Oh, dude, it's a lot of years.
Yeah.
God, I'd say my most recent favorite piece that I've done, I'm working on a sleeve on one of my buddies, and I did a couple big skull pieces on them, and it's not complete yet, but that's probably, just because they're huge pieces, that's probably...
Yeah, you got to put a lot more detail into it, sort of thing.
Yeah, we did his upper arm and then his lower arm, and I could shoot you the pictures off my Facebook page, but, they're just big pieces and real complicated technical, and, like,
sure.
I'm looking forward to the end product, you know?
Yeah. So you've brought this skill set into Camby. Have you found a lot of people that want tattoos here in town?
Actually, yeah. You know, and I've gone around to a bunch of different businesses with flyers and business
mm-hmm.
cards and talked to people, and like everyone's still kind of going, "What? There's a tattoo shop here?" And you know, I don't know if it's the location we're at right now, but you know, people aren't really aware, the community isn't really aware of the shop.
Sure.
You know, so.
Yeah, and I know that getting tattoos is becoming more and more mainstream
right.
for a lot of people.
Right.
And
yeah.
a lot of people do it for a lot of different reasons. Some people are very into the art of it. Some people are more into the symbolism of what they're getting. That's probably more what I do.
Right.
And some people just want ink in their body.
Right, right.
What do you gravitate towards?
Well, as of right now, I'm trying to build a solid clientele, so I'm taking pretty much, you know, anybody that walks in, that as long as we're cohesive on the finished product idea, I'll do it. But my ultimate goal is to do fully custom pieces and
yeah.
like just have a select clientele that I tattoo. People that want art pieces, like I'm an artist first.
Yeah.
My regular art, my oils and colored pencils and all that stuff are far surpassed.
Right.
I want to give them art tattoo
pieces.
Skill.
Something that they want to show off.
Right, right. Not just, I'll take number 6 off the wall I'm good with that. But yeah, that's my ultimate goal is to fully custom pieces,
right.
you know, big pieces or whatnot. But, right.
So I'm sure that the question is going to come up for you. You know, will you tattoo younger?
No, no. So, yeah, that was one of my concerns. Me and my fiance, you know, we kicked it around for a while and talked about that, you know, how, like I said, she grew up here, so she knows how the community reacts and, like, how they protect the young and whatnot. And, you know, it was a concern.
Sure.
That, you know, I'm going to get kids trying to come in and hang out, and
mm-hmm.
sorry, you know what I mean? It's not going to happen, or I'm not going to tattoo you.
Right.
It's actually a felony to tattoo a minor in this state.
Is it really?
Oh,
I didn't realize it was that big deal.
If you get caught tattooing a minor, I believe it's a $5,000 to $10,000 fine. They take your equipment, they charge you with a felony, and up to so many years in prison. And it's penetration of a minor, which falls under like a sex crime or something.
Oh wow!
So, and you're done in the state. You'll never be able to tattoo in the state ever again. And so I just want the parents to know, and the community.
Yeah.
That it's not going to happen, and they don't have to worry about that, you know. I don't use drugs. I don't promote drugs. I don't promote kids doing that stuff or trying to get tattooed, especially by me, you know.
Right.
And, like,
because first and foremost, you're an artist, and then you're also a businessman.
Right. I'm an artist.
You don't want to lose your business.
Right. I'm an artist who just happens to do what he loves for a profession, and it's tattooing. So.
Awesome. So what is kind of the step look like? The steps look like for me to go from sitting here with an idea to getting tattooed?
Well, first, like, you know, you'd come in and we'd just start kicking around what you're thinking about and how soon. And then I'd ask you for some ID. And actually, that wouldn't be until we agreed upon, okay, this is what I want. And, I can give you an estimate on how many hours I think it might take, you know, 2 to 5 hours or 5 to 10 or whatever, you know, depending on how big it is or whatever. And then you'd put a deposit down. And so when you came in to actually get tattooed, you would bring your ID. I have you fill out a 5-page form that covers my butt with OHLA, the Oregon Health Licensing Agency. And it protects me and it protects you.
Sure.
And, so, yeah, that would cover that. By the time you came in for your actual appointment, I'd have your piece drawn, and I'd take your license, make a copy, have you fill out the forms, and I'd start pouring ink, man.
It's crazy to me that tattooing, it combines these two really interesting things. It combines art, you know, with people who want to have beauty and they want to express themselves.
Right.
And then there's also this, like, this clinical side of it, of like, you got to fill out forms, we got to, you know, make sure the documentation is correct. There's a lot of sterilization stuff that goes into everything.
Yes.
It's so amazing to me that tattooing sits right in this Venn diagram of like, of clinical and expressive, you know, and it's right there.
Right. So, yeah, something crazy that, like, when I went through, because in this state you have to go through tattoo school. Dude, I felt like I was going for a doctor. By the time I was done, I had a stack of paper, and I knew more about your skin, all the different levels, and how many cell levels, and, like...
Oh, man.
It was crazy. It was crazy to me, because, like, I started in California, and you didn't have to do none of this.
Right.
You just went and paid $37 or $47, whatever it was back in the day, and you went and got a license, and if you could find somebody to take you on in a shop, that was it.
Yeah.
You tattoo minor, it didn't matter.
Just, right.
You know.
Right.
But Oregon has created this program, like, and, like, all the other states are getting on board because, I mean, it deals with everything that you have to do and have to know about skin and cross-contamination and bloodborne pathogen stuff and, you know, everything. And it's like the leader in the industry. Oregon is the leader in the industry in this nation for... tattooing, and like all the other states are picking up on it now. California, you can't tattoo minors, and like they're getting on board
good.
Too. And
yeah,
it's pretty cool, man. It's cool, and but it's crazy to me, like how much I had to remember. It was like a 6-hour test or so. I don't even remember. It's been 6 years or something like that. But
well, I think we're good to stop recording so that we can start talking about how I can get my tattoo done.
Cool. Yeah. Let's do it.
I think we'll do that. Maybe we'll film me actually getting a tattoo and everyone can see me in pain.
Cool, cool, man.
Having fun.
Yeah. Don't die naked. Get tattooed.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
As you might have been able to tell, Steve is a knowledgeable and very talented artist. If you're interested in asking him a few questions about his shop, art, and skills, then check out his shop at 615 First Avenue Southeast or his Facebook page at Don't Die Naked, Get Tattooed. Or call him at 971-719-3826.
This hurts so bad. And he's got an elbow done. He's got like one line. I'm in so much pain.
The great outdoors. Sometimes you just gotta get away to a place where life is simpler. The air is clean and the nearest ringing phone is about a million miles away. One of the best places that we found
is My Cowboy Cabin near Joseph, Oregon, in the heart of the Eagle Cap Wilderness.
Eagle Cap is the largest unspoiled wilderness area in Oregon, with breathtaking views of granite mountains and crystal clear lakes, and more than 500 miles of trails to explore. It's one of the premier hiking, fishing, and hunting destinations in the Pacific Northwest. My Cowboy Cabin is open from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend, and can be reserved on a weekly or monthly basis, depending on availability. With a cabin that sleeps up to 8 people,
and also a teepee that sleeps 8 or more.
That's right. It's perfect for family vacations, retreats, reunions, and more. Find out more at mycowboycabin.com. Don't you hate it when you're just getting caught up on your favorite show and then your video streaming service drops it without warning? Wouldn't it be cool if you could record unlimited programs at once and watch them whenever and wherever you want? Meet Easy Video from DirectLink, the only app-based TV service in Canby that includes most of the major live local broadcast channels, sports, and national networks. Easy Video is, well, easy. It's compatible with your Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smartphone, and laptop, so you have more options for how and where you watch TV. And the best part of all, Easy Video members save an average of $360 a year over traditional cable. Say goodbye to HD fees, DVR fees, equipment rentals, and costly installation. Go to directlink.coop/EZV or visit them at the corner of Southeast 2nd and Juniper Street in Canby to learn more about the future of TV.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guest today, Caleb Garrison, and to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do. We encourage you to check them out and help support local small businesses who support us. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
In our next episode, we...
Actually, we can't. We can't talk
about it. I mean... We got to tell him something.
We can't talk. Like, we can't. Remember the clause?
There's going to be some changes. Can I? Changes?
I might have to bleep that out.
We can't just, like, blindside them.
If you have a news tip, an idea for guests we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CanBeNow, or on our website, canbenowpod.com. Thanks for listening while we did this, guys.